we present the News Quiz with your host, Jeremy Hardy.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. I am hosting this week because Sandy has been suspended for biting the producer's knees when her pre-show herring was not chilled to the correct temperature. No, she's actually poorly, so I've stepped into her shoes. And very fetching 0 to 3 month booties they are. So get well soon, Sandy. And we start with a cutting from the Western Daily Press, read by Diana Speed.
The UK's first bus, powered by human waste, will go into service in Bristol at the end of the month. The bus will operate between Stockwood and Cribbs Causeway along the number 2 route.
Thanks to everyone who sent us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Hugo Rifkind and Ellis James? And opposite them on my left, Samira Ahmed and Bob Mills. Hugo, who wants to budge the Electra in the right direction?
I think this might be George Osborne, who this week put on a child's suit for some reason and brushed his hair forwards and delivered his pre-election budget. And unlike most pre-election budgets, it didn't really have that many kind of sort of acts of outright bribery in it. But it did have a few, and the one that seems to have caught the most sort of media attention is this plan that if you save enough money in an ISA, then the state will give you a further £3,000 to put towards your first home, which, of course, Ed Miliband sneered at. Because of him, £3,000 wouldn't even be enough to buy the white goods in his... No, actually, I can't. I'm not going to tell another joke about Ed Miliband's kitchen. I'm so sick of jokes about Ed Miliband's kitchen. In George Osborne's speech alone, there were about 14 jokes about Ed Miliband's kitchen. And you could sort of sense them all coming, because his little helium voice would get all tight and excited. And you'd be like, ooh, there's a joke. Again, it's the kitchen. He's even announced policies, which you can tell he only announced because they gave him an excuse to make a joke about Ed Miliband's kitchen.
You know what they say, look after the pennies and George Osborne will look after himself. Is everyone very excited by the budget?
Well, duty's down on beer and cider, I noticed, so good news for snakebite drinkers.
I tell you what, I can't wholly dislike George Osborne, because...
You can, it's fine.
If you're going to be in the public eye, you know, they get this kind of media training, and you must think, I want to put across an image, and a lot of politicians sit there and think, I want to look like... Oh, I don't know, Obama's got good hair and I'll try and get that hair. Or I want that. Tony Curtis has got good hair. And George Osborne has looked at the haircut button and thought, no, Caesar Augustus. That's the fella for me.
But, I mean, Labour were particularly kind of insipid about the budget. They had, It was Ed Balls, was on the radio, and they said, you know, what did you think of the budget? And he's like, oh, it was terrible, didn't like it at all. And they were like, well, what would you change? He goes, oh, no, we wouldn't change anything. We'll stick with that. It's fine. We just didn't like it.
At one stage, you said it was interesting. Come on, Ed. Just come clean. You haven't read it. It's 100 pages long.
And there's a church roof fund, which is great. There's a trebling of the church roof repair fund, which keep everyone warm and dry when they turn up at the food bank, won't it?
A cynic might say this is yet another attempt to bribe older voters who are more likely to be voting Tory, especially if they're affluent, so hence, you know, the cuts in inheritance tax, which, while not raising the threshold on national insurance contributions, but it's just stuff which, if you're already old enough and rich enough, only some people are, to save a lot, there's plenty that...
And pensioners will be able to cash in their annuity, which is creating the fear that they will just blow it all on Werther's Originals. Did anyone see, this was very sweet, did anyone see Danny Alexander's pretend budget?
It was Danny Alexander's alternative economic plan. Sounds like a terrible Roald Dahl book, doesn't it?
The Liberals do have to make a response because it's like the old philosophical question. If a tree falls in the forest and the Lib Dems don't issue a response to it, did it really happen? This is indeed the story. This week, George Osborne presented his final budget before the general election. The personal allowance on income tax will rise to £11,000 by 2018, as long as it's not overturned by the Chinese government, who will by then own all of us. Interestingly, there was no mention of the NHS in the budget. Well, I suppose Osborne thinks some things are best kept private. Osborne peppered his speech with jokes at the expense of Ed Miliband in what was seen by many observers as a thinly disguised bid to deputise for Sandy Toksvig on this week's News Quiz. 2 points to Hugo. Ellis, whose leaks are sinking the surveillance ship?
Oh, this is Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
Because Theresa May this week has claimed that Edward Snowden's revelations and his whistleblowing have not only put British security at risk, but it's cost the taxpayer millions and millions of pounds. Now, I wasn't sure where I stood on the Edward Snowden thing, so I thought this week I'll finally sort of really set my stall out, and I read a lot about it. And I read that, you know, lots of conspiracy theorists think that you shouldn't buy a round of drinks in a pub because in years to come, the NHS, when it's privatised, they'll be able to hold that receipt up and say, well, it's your own fault and all that sort of stuff. And I read that smartphones are following us and tracking everything. And I have never, ever been more paranoid about my own Google search history. And not for the usual reason. That's... I mean, that is the least of my concern now. But apparently British spies have had to tone down and change their spying techniques because of Snowden's whistleblowing, which means that the old-fashioned ways of a newspaper with two eye holes cut out, I mean, that's all come to an end now. That's... For years, a man up a tree with binoculars, that Snowden's ruined all of this. And Al-Qaeda have had to stop using email. They've had to go back to VHS.
Al-Qaeda are quite digitally behind. They only got a website in 2006 and then found that the Al-Qaeda.com domain name was already taken by a Rochdale car dealer called Alan Qaeda. But it's also affecting the big technology companies because they're no longer sharing information with the intelligence services. One source said, we had a meeting with Amazon and all they'd tell us about terrorists was they'd been reading an awful lot of Maeve Binchy.
Even if Snowden did make, like, the life of the intelligence services much, much harder, that's quite different from saying that's necessarily a bad thing, because if he'd sort of made everyone take their privacy more seriously, then that's going to include terrorists, because terrorists are just like you and me.
This is the intelligence leaks by the whistleblower Edward Snowden, which apparently have devastated Britain's ability to fight terrorism, according to a report by the think tank the Henry Jackson Society. The secret techniques revealed by his leaks are said to have made it easier for terrorists to avoid detection. Terrorists are now apparently using human couriers, and ISIS will soon start delivering cards that say, "We tried to commit a terrorist atrocity, but you were out." 2 points to Ellis. Samira, who's got into a fight about Unite?
Well, this is Ed Miliband and Len McCluskey, who leads the Unite Union. There's this kind of row over the selection of a candidate for what's regarded as, I think, a pretty safe Labour seat. Len McCluskey said Labour was trying to make Ed Miliband look macho by challenging this candidate, that's Unite's preferred candidate for Halifax. And because the unions, and particularly Unite, I think, are the biggest funders on both of the Labour Party and also, I think, of Ed Miliband's leadership bid, I think there's an interesting issue about whether they feel they have rights in
the Yeah, because
Labour
Unite wanted to be able to choose the person who would be humiliatingly beaten by the SNP in the election.
I love the idea of sort of Ed Miliband's advisers saying, listen, it's going to be a bold move, but one picture of you shirtless on a horse and that pole bacon sandwich thing will be completely forgotten, I promise. Because the sort of the trade union movement was always quite macho, wasn't it? It was all cheese and tomato sandwiches and
string vests visible through a nylon shirt.
Yeah, and, you know, sort of smoking and negotiating all night and all that sort of stuff. Like, Len McCluskey strikes me as quite a macho bloke. Like, someone, if he's got kids, you know, Calpol! We didn't have Calpol in the 70s, all that sort of stuff.
Cheese and tomato sandwiches, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know what it was like in the Welsh mining unions, but where I'm from, there was no tomatoes on the sandwiches.
Well, it's always worrying when politicians start trying to be macho. Remember when Haig started boasting about how many pints he drinks, and then Harriet Harman started opening beer bottles with her teeth on the Andrew Marr show?
Maybe I agree with Ellis and his Putin thing. Say what you like about Putin. He inspires loyalty amongst his followers. And maybe, and we haven't got a Crimea, we haven't got Ukraine, but we have got Wales. Maybe if Ed sent a few tanks in there and said, no, we're having it back, that would do.
We've still got it, Bob. I'm not sure where you've
been.
That's
why my argument falls down slightly, obviously.
Yes, a fresh row has erupted between Labour and their backers, the Unite Union, with Unite General Secretary Len McCluskey saying Ed Miliband is trying to appear macho. The latest row follows a failure of McCluskey's friend Carrie Murphy to become Labour's candidate for Halifax. McCluskey said that Labour were manufacturing rows. Row manufacturing was once one of Yorkshire's major industries, alongside story weaving and scandal mongering. 2 points to Samira. Bob, have a listen to this.
You've got to have a question on the end of that, sure.
No, I just wanted you to listen to that. I thought you might be interested in hearing Margaret Rutherford having an asthma attack. Bob! Bob, whose misconduct has been judged gross?
Who's
judged gross?
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. You're talking about the judges.
Yeah.
This terrible thing. Three or four? Three. Four? Three of them.
Three have been sacked.
Three judges have been sacked. One jumped before he was pushed. For watching porn. First thing to get clear is they're not the judges, they're not the ones with the wigs who sit in the High Court. They're quite far low down the judge scale. I think one of them was qualified to do dog shows. And the other one, and the other one poetry competitions. And what they were doing was watching porn on their home office computers. Because watching porn on your computer, it's not a crime. Was said straight away that there was no illegal porn or anything of that kind of nature. I thought they were just doing it in their offices, but to me, you reckon that one of them was on the bench at the time?
I wasn't there at the time, but I just think, you know, it makes all those MPs playing Angry Birds seem so unimportant in comparison. No, I think the thing is that although it's not illegal to view porn, as you say, doing so on office equipment is considered such a serious act of misconduct that it undermines public confidence. I think what's interesting is every so often you have this discussion about whether judges are out of touch and, you know, they're too old. And a couple of these, I think at least one of them was 65, and there'd been some issues about judgments and actually, you know, sexual offence cases, which might be relevant. Mm. But it seemed to me more the relevance was, you know, that judge years ago who said, "Who are the Beatles?" And there's something of that about people who don't know what any 13-year-old boy could tell them, which is how you wipe your viewing history on a computer.
And indeed, yeah, that's right.
Well, but then again, if you're looking at that, sometimes if you're in court and you look at the judge and you think, oh, God, he's an old fog. He went to public school. He doesn't know anything about the world I live in. He's judging me and he doesn't even... But if you think, there you go, the one thing we've got in common...
The thing with this story is I saw in The Guardian it said the naming of all four is an unexpected blow to the judiciary. You just think everything sounds fantastic with it. All rise, all of that stuff.
I just wanted to see if we ended up fixing the washing machine.
It is a problem because apparently, you know, there is concern that they might actually have done this during a case. And The Telegraph said defence lawyers may be able to lodge appeals if these judges were distracted from key evidence because they were watching porn.
I just kept imagining, you know, those news stories where it says the jury took less than an hour to reach their verdict, and this judge going, "Aww."
Three judges have been sacked and one has resigned after the Judicial Conduct Investigations Office found they had all watched pornography on their work computers. Suspicions were raised during a trial when a barrister shouted, "Objection," and the judge replied, "No, it's just the way my robes fall." This is the biggest misuse of judicial IT equipment since a High Court judge was caught using a memory stick to stir his G&T during a fraud trial. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Ellis 4 and Samira and Bob 4 points. We start round two with a cutting from the Radio Free Europe website.
Corruption is a major problem in the former Soviet republics, but some presidents are trying to do something about it. Tajik President Emomali Rahmon has set up a national anti-corruption agency and has appointed his son to run it.
Thanks to Chris Alexander for sending us that. Alice, why don't British jeans fit the Valkyries?
I think this is to do with the story that there's been a 20-year study into the genetics that make up the people of the British Isles, and apparently 30% of white British people have German ancestry.
Yeah.
Which would ruin a lot of our classic sitcoms. The really interesting thing is that it's been revealed that the Romans, Vikings and the Normans, obviously invaded Britain for hundreds of years. They left very little genetic DNA. Also, genetically, it's quite interesting because the Welsh are very genetically distinct from the rest of the UK. And I can prove this. I have a genetic complaint known as Welshman's thigh, which is basically I have an extraordinarily short inside leg. So whenever I try to buy jeans in England, shopkeepers look at me like I've just walked in from Mordor because my buttocks are so close to the floor.
Do you have a short outside leg as well, or are your legs bananas? So apparently the Welsh, no disrespect, Ellis, but you are the remnants of our caveman ancestors.
Thank you. Which
won't surprise anyone who's seen a Swansea man ruthlessly hunt down chips and curry sauce on a Friday night.
So the statistic is that Brits are about 30% German. That still means they're less German than the royal family.
Absolutely. And we're 9% Belgian. When did the Belgians invade then?
Well, they must have been really pleased because they got here and went to Wales and they were like, it's the size of Belgium.
But it does mean that everybody, apparently, everyone on this panel, well, all the people of British descent, will have a little bit of Scandinavian in them. So could everybody just make sure they haven't sat on Sandy? We haven't seen her.
What I was fascinated by is the way no one's moved around, generally, in Britain. People are still in the same place where they would have been 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's what one of the scientists said. He said that basically there are no enormous differences between the native population now as it was 1,400 years ago. So all of those jokes that comics make when they go to Norfolk and say, give me six, that is relevant all over the country.
My mum, when she retired, took up the family trees. And she went to a night school, and she did a course in genealogy, and she did it. And after about 3 years, I said, are you still doing it? And she said, no, I've given up. And I said, why have you hit a block? And she said, no, I just got bored. As I got back to 1746, and I'd got as far as Crewe, which is 23 miles away. There's no one moved.
There is actually research done which showed that most people live within 4 miles of where they were born. But if you go somewhere like Newcastle, which I actually did go to on my honeymoon, and you see people walking down the street with just a short-sleeve shirt when it's minus whatever outside, you know they are 100% Viking, really.
Well, actually, the expression...
I'm really sorry, but can we go back to you going to Newcastle on your honeymoon?
So, the full story is, we actually rented this really nice cottage in the countryside by Hadrian's Wall, and after 2 days I said, I need a cappuccino.
This is the news that despite a recent influx of tiny Danish panel show hosts, the British actually have very little Viking DNA in their genetic makeup. 2,000 people were tested for the study by the Wellcome Trust Centre for Human Genetics, and most were relieved to discover that they were real humans. Most white British people are, in fact, genetically most similar to modern-day Germans. You didn't really need genetics to tell you that. The love of sausages, beer and invading other people's countries, the clues were all there for you. 2 points to Ellis. Hugo, who might already be sorry about a boycott?
This is Elton John, who, he got angry because Mr. Dolce of Dolce & Gabbana told an Italian magazine that he didn't like IVF. He said, you are born and you have a father and a mother. At least it should be like that. That's why I'm not convinced by what I call chemical children, synthetic babies. Which was a really weird thing to say, but I mean, partly because it suggests he doesn't really understand what IVF is, and he thinks it's just like sort of building a baby out of plastic or something. But Elton John got really cross because his children were born via IVF, and so he said people should boycott Dolce & Gabbana, and so I am, and hence my shabby ball gown this evening.
It's, tell you one thing, it's a really, really easy boycott, isn't it, Dolce & Gabbana? You know, I've been doing it, unawares, for years now. Now, people who think that what Dolce said is correct are calling on people to boycott Elton John. Again, I've been doing that for years. I don't think I've ever been on both sides of a boycott before. It's an interesting position to be in, morally.
And the terrible thing in this is a very serious thing when somebody makes a statement and it causes offence, but maybe it's just the world that I live in. I read the whole thing and then thought, oh, so there is actually a Dolce and a Gabbana there.
Also, the day after this news story broke, there was a picture of Elton John carrying a Dolce & Gabbana bag,
yeah,
very embarrassingly. And initially, his sources, or somebody claimed that, oh, it's just been photoshopped, it wasn't a Dolce & Gabbana bag. And then they rather embarrassingly admitted that he just had his lunch in a Dolce & Gabbana bag. He is miles away from the Boots meal deal.
It's been an interesting development, actually, in kind of gay politics. And the idea that gay couples actually want exactly the same things, want to be married, want to have children, is, you know, it's been one of those things that does divide gay people still.
The other Elton John story this week, which I preferred enormously. Did you see that? No? Elton John's mum had her birthday party. And she didn't invite Elton John, because they're not talking, so she got an Elton John impersonator instead. Yeah, it was in the mail. She got him to sing and dance to the Crocodile Rock.
Elton John announced this week he was boycotting Dolce & Gabbana because of their views about IVF, only to be pictured the following day with a Dolce & Gabbana bag. Elton said on Sunday that Dolce & Gabbana were guilty of archaic thinking and he would never wear their clothes again. Remarks were echoed seconds later in a higher voice by Kiki D. And nothing if not topical on this show, I tell you. 2 points to Hugo. Ellis, who will be making tracks quicker than before?
Oh, apparently defence chiefs. They want the speed limit for armoured vehicles doubled because there's concerns that tanks are causing traffic jams on Britain's roads and people are becoming frustrated because they're behind a Sherman tank on a B road and are trying dangerous overtaking manoeuvres, which I've got to be honest, has never happened to me. Also, you'd have to have a lot of bottle to beep a Sherman tank, wouldn't you? So, because, you know, if you press a button, it'll go beep, beep, and if they do that, it'll go boom, boom, which is not a very one-sided sort of battle.
But wasn't the other thing they found that, because 20 miles an hour is right between the gear ratios, the soldiers were vibrating at dangerous levels?
Yeah, they were ending it with pins and needles. Yeah. It's hardly the Hurt Locker, is it?
Tank engines have actually, despite what Samira says, tank engines have got much better, although the fat controller still says Gordon is lazy.
They don't have a steering wheel at tank, do they?
They don't need a steering wheel.
Don't they?
You just go over everything.
But you do occasionally need to, you know,
wiggle
direct. Yeah, I think you do it by you brake on the left or you brake on the right, I think.
You're such an alpha male.
Yeah. I went to public school, Jeremy. We learned how to drive tanks.
Oh, did you have, like, tanks and guns and things? Like
We all had our own tank, yeah. Well, six, no,
was
sorry.
It like, was it like that film?
That's ridiculous. Sixth form, you get a tank.
Oh, wow. Were you in the cadets?
Yeah.
What else? You can kill a man through sheer privilege.
I can strip...
The government's announced plans to allow tanks to drive at 40 miles an hour on British roads, following concerns that their previous maximum speed of 20 miles an hour was causing congestion. Philip Dunn, the Defence Equipment Minister, warned that tank crews will lack the driving skills for battle unless they practice on public roads. The tank driving skills test includes activities like mirror, signal, obliterate, and when I hit this clipboard against the dashboard, I'd like you to perform an emergency ground battle. 2 points to Ellis. Samira, which NIMBYs don't want to net a bargain?
I genuinely feel sorry for the people of Lym, I think it's a town in Cheshire, who voted for some hideous carbuncle of a development in their town on the understanding that they would get a Waitrose as part of it. And they got a Netto instead. And see, did you hear that? They understand.
Let me give you the other side of this argument, because you need have no sympathy for the people of Lym. Let me tell you where Lym is. Lym is, it describes itself as a town in Cheshire. I come from Cheshire. Lym is right up on the border, but they call themselves Cheshire because that attracts the soap stars. What I'm saying is, as my mother used to say when she cleaned for people in Lym, love, if at night you can go up to your top bedroom and turn the light off and see the lights from the factories in Runcorn, you're living on the Wirral. But what they were told, you see, this is why people get what they deserve. They were told there's going to be a development and there will be a supermarket. Now, we can't say, for security reasons, and commercial security is very important, we can't say who's going to be. Let's just say, we think you're going to be rather pleased. And they are lovely, we'll do it. And then, there you go, it's Netto. Be pleased, Netto's all right, it's like Danish Asda. You all right with that? And my favourite woman And her name is Sheila Woodyatt, and she's the local councillor who said, I'm not happy. I'm really not happy. I would have preferred Waitrose, which is a very high-end retailer. So I know that makes me sound like a terrible snob.
Residents of Lynn in Cheshire are trying to prevent the opening of a Netto supermarket in the village, claiming it is not the upmarket food store they were promised. The developers were told the village they were preparing the site... Oh, flip. This is why they get her. She's because she can read.
I think he's done very well. I think he's done as well as Sandy does. In her second language.
Older residents of Lynn are concerned the shop will lower the tone and affect property prices, while younger residents are hopeful that the shop will lower the tone and affect property prices. Lynn is an historic village where the average house price is nearly £300,000 or 30 million packs of Netto sausages. Waitrose are said to be leading a relief effort to the crisis-stricken village, airdropping vital supplies of quinoa and coconut water. 2 points to Samira. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share?
This is lovely. It's from a TripAdvisor review of the Kielder Water and Forest Park attraction, which is in Northumberland. Wait till the permafrost thaws and it's a really beautiful place. During the summer, it's full of activities for all the families, although insect repellent is highly advised. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was just funny because the insect repellent, but it says incest repellent. I thought it was funny that you have to wait for the permafrost to thaw and then you need insect repellent.
The misprint is entirely lost on you.
Well, exactly.
Thanks very much, everyone. Let's hear the final scores. Hugo and Ellis have 10 points, but the winners this week are Samira and Bob with 12 points. Before we leave you, here is a quote from a spokesperson for the National Obesity Forum sent in by Steve Eastland.
New EU legislation means that employers will be required to make adjustments to their furniture and doors for very large people. I believe this will cause friction in the workplace between obese people and other workers.
Hand me that goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkin, Ellis James, Samira Ahmed and Bob Mills. In the chair was Jeremy Hardy and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script was written by Andy Walton, James Kettle and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Sarah Campbell and Max Davis. The producer was Richard Morris.